now from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, Shocker fans, want the latest on Wichita State athletics? Let's go right to the source with Shocker AD Kevin Saul.
And welcome back in hour number two here on Sports Daily, everybody. Glad to be with you on a Wednesday. Hope everybody survived the long night of Election Day. Hope everybody realizes the sun came up and we can all enjoy our lives just the same. And that includes Shocker Athletics. We are into basketball season and we are happy to have Kevin Saul with us, Wichita State Athletic Director. It's been a few weeks here, Kevin. I know you're not feeling the best, so we do appreciate you making some time for us here today.
Oh, not at all. I appreciate the opportunity to be on, guys. Just, you know, it's going around. You get the transition from one season to the next, and we got a long season ahead of us. Got home late the other night. I think our heads hit the pillow around 2 a.m. after a really nice Western Kentucky win, and got to take care of your bodies for sure.
Yeah, I've been coughing for 3 weeks. Let's start with that game at Western Kentucky. I love the challenge of the game. I love that it was scheduled that way. I love that you get them early in the season to really get a test. And look, I don't know all the takeaways from a 91-84 win like that, but you'll take it, right? I mean, we don't know how many quality games in the non-con are going to be there. This might very well be one of them. I got to imagine those coaches and you guys are just thrilled to have that road win right out of the gates.
Yeah, I think the net split on a road quad two is a 125, if I'm not mistaken. So it stands to reason that could serve, which is a quality win for us. You know, it was a series that we put together shortly after my arrival here at Wichita State, and I've known Todd Stewart, the AD at Western, for a while. And so we put it together, but we left the dates somewhat open because that flexibility is helpful as the staff's trying to work through dates. And Paul said it many times. He wanted an early firm road test, and it was just that. The place was darn near sold out. They were celebrating their Conference USA championship from last year, their league champ, and doing the ring ceremony. And the place was really lathered up and excited. It was a great environment. And I thought our guys responded really, really well. So anytime you can win and learn and do it on the road, I think there's some great lessons to take back.
And in that, the big thing that jumps out to me is a team that won two games on the road last year. It was obviously a problem. That has to be, because we got a lot of these players are the same. Now, the lead man there was not, with his 31 points and all the greatness that came from Justin Hill in that game. But that's a team that struggled in that area. In all the years you've spent with these college athletes, how much do you think just getting that monkey off their backs to all these returning players to open that way, that feels meaningful?
Yes, it does. And, you know, there's an element of you walking into a game like that, and you walk into the arena that night, holy smokes, this is a really firm season opening game. And I commend Paul for doing it. It really a unique approach to want to learn what we have very early so that you can make adjustments. I don't think our first road game last year was till late November, early December, true road game. So anyway, at the end of the day, it's a great lesson. We learned a lot. As we know, guys, we've got an older team. We've got a lot returning, five of the top seven scorers from last year. We lost three to the portal, and the average team in our league lost eight. So I think that continuity will play out really well over the course of the season. You're going to see different players step up and do different things. I called Corey Torgerson right after the game, and I said, hey, listen, buddy, I really appreciate all the work and time and effort that you put into Monte's reinstatement process, because when Quincy Ballard got two fouls early on, we go to. And those are the things that our administrative staff work tirelessly, and to connect their efforts to winning in a moment like that is really, really important. So just appreciative for everybody and what they're doing.
You know, Kevin, I've got to hand it to you, because This is the first time since 1992 that Wichita State's gone on the road for an opening game in men's basketball. That's really gutsy because most teams are state, you know, those that are the ones that will end up possibly playing in the NCAA tournament. They're all playing at home, playing somebody that's pretty sure it's going to be a win. But you go on the road. I've got to ask, how was the sausage made on this particular decision to go on the road? Was there a reason? Is there a method to the madness? Because that's gutsy to go on the road and play a Western Kentucky that is really a good basketball team. But you'd make that decision. Let's go on the road. What? And it worked out, by the way, perfect, and that will pay dividends. What went into the decision-making on that?
It's like, Paul, you they're with you win or tie. If it doesn't work out well, it's a really dumb decision. But at the end of the day, when I arrived in Wichita in July of 22, to give you the true backstory, I spent 3.5 years at Murray State, as you guys know. That's where I came from prior to being here. And Murray State and Western Kentucky were huge, huge rivals way back in the day when they were both in the OVC. And it was the closest geographic rival. And we had actually spun up a series with Western because it was a good series and it was close. We did that at Murray, and we hadn't played them in like 18 years or 20 years. So it was going to be a great one for our fan base. And then had the blessed opportunity to come to Wichita. And I called Todd for some reason other than a basketball game. And I said, hey, Todd, what do you want to appear with us? And he said, yeah, let's do it. And so we did one the first one game. This was last year at our place. As you guys remember, we got the win there. And then the second one was this year at their place. We left and ended the day. That certainly is helpful to the staff. When you got ADs locking in dates, it kind of hamstrings the staff. And so we knew we were going to be at their place this year. And Paul was really pushing to get that early in the schedule. And it just happened to be the first regular season game.
We got a home game coming up here this weekend. It is the home opener, Montana State. And I'll ask you this, and we'll get into the other sports. I know it's been a tumultuous week, probably for your staff. This cheerleading story. Now, forgive me because I've been out of town. I don't know how much publicly you've talked about some of the blowback from some premium seating. So I'll just take it all the way back and start at the beginning. What is the change that's happening at basketball games with where these seats are and how it will impact what fans are used to seeing or normally going to see from cheer and dance on a game day?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that. And I'll start with change is hard. And we approached this subject back in April and May after last season and shared with our dance leadership that this was something that we were going to take a look at. And we were going to offer it up as an opportunity to sell some premium seats on the floor. As you guys know, there are decisions of the head and there are decisions of the heart, and sometimes those two can conflict. Our responsibility is to generate revenue to match championship level expectations in 16 of our varsity sports. And I think it becomes a difficult conversation. Because in no way does it diminish the importance of what we're doing. But spirit squads, which are defined as bands, cheer, dance, majorettes, it's not necessarily the primary mission of athletics. And I would share the reasoning why is that the NCAA doesn't classify them as intercollegiate athletic sports. And when you get into the 16 intercollegiate athletic sports that we do have, we are responsible for APR, graduate success rate, medical components. There's a whole litany of expectations that cost a lot of money to meet and exceed from the NCAA's perspective for those 16 varsity sports. So we simply don't have that with cheer and dance. Now, what I will share with you is I think there's been some miscommunication, and that's clearly the case when you get something that spins up on social media. There's a lot of third-party information that gets exchanged. But at the end of the day, what has changed, Jacob, is we have shifted from two corners of the floor that are dedicated to dance to one corner of the floor that's dedicated to change. We've installed two new premium
seating areas in the northwest and the southeast corner of the floor. Have the opportunity to create a new revenue stream of about $220,000 for our programs. Ironically, we spend about $220,000 on Spirit every year, and we've done some research that I think is really really critical in terms of understanding what that support looks like on our campus. Athletics is the only entity that supports the Spirit groups on campus, right? Provides financial resources for the Spirit groups on campus. And when you take the 5-year average number of what we're replicating to cheer, dance, band, majorettes program, those types of things, it's about $220,000 a year, which is significant. When we first got here in July of 22, I met with all head coaches, met with the leadership of cheer and dance as well, because I wanted to understand where they were in their journey. And they were displeased with funding. They were displeased that their game day locker room had been taken from them. There was a lot of displeasure. And we immediately reinstituted the locker room. We increased from FY22 to FY23. We increased athletic department support for Spirit groups by 61%, which is just unheard of. So they certainly are important, but there's been a lot of extreme responses to what we've done. And it's not abnormal what we've done in intercollegiate athletics. I will share with you that Virginia Commonwealth and College of Charleston, who are Division I AAA peers without football revenue, they don't have their cheer and dance on the floor, period. They're off in the student section. They're on the stands. At the end of the day, we've allocated one corner of the floor, which is pretty typical. In most college basketball environments, you're going to get one corner of the floor for Spirit, and there's going to be some component that interacts with the student section or is in an end zone behind the basket. And so we're not abnormal in that. It's just a change for Wichita State. And certainly, you know, my heart is certainly with the folks that are disappointed with that, and I can empathize with disappointment and even disagreement with the decision. In some cases, it has gotten very personal, and that certainly is not where we want to be with that. But at the end of the day, we're going to try and make right decisions for all 16 of our intercollegiate athletic varsity sports.
Yeah, and look, we appreciate your candid nature in this, and I want to work through it, because I do think there are two pretty clear important things happening in the changing landscape of college athletics. So if I understood what you said there, there was how much of an appetite for the premium seats has there been? And when you say $220,000 has been raised through a revenue stream, are those tickets sold already? Like, that's what it's already generated to offer that seating?
Yeah, that's the max capacity of those seats. I think we've sold all but two or three on the southeast corner, and maybe all but five or six on the northwest. I'd have to check, guys. I'd have to check our ticketing manifest. But we've got some folks that are interested in the remainder of those seats for this season as well. So we're continuing to have those conversations. At the end of the day, guys, trying to walk this really fine line, because as we know, college athletics is changing. In April, the House settlement is going to be ratified, if you will, signed, approved, which will lead to about $650,000 a year in retroactive NIL payments. It will lead to approximately $3 million in terms of roster maximums and scholarships associated with that, and another $3 million in revenue share, which is basically replacing the nonprofit perspective. So we've got about $7 million that we're going to need to come up with to remain competitive here in the next 9 to 10 months. And we're going to have to make some incredibly difficult decisions. And certainly not communicating that this is the least of those difficult decisions. But at the end of the day, we've not cut funding. We've not cut the opportunity for our cheer and dance teams to access the floor, pregame, media timeouts, halftime. They have all the access to the floor. Really, the only thing that's changed is the location from which they watch the game while the ball's in play and the clock is ticking. And so if that gives us the ability to generate $250,000 in new revenue to fund our programs, we've got 273 student athletes to think about. We've got 16 varsity sports to think about. We've got 100 coaches and staff to think about in addition to the Spirit groups, not in isolation from the Spirit groups. And so it's my job to look at things collectively and not necessarily from a very narrow lens.
And then one other point on this, I think, Kevin, that we'll clear up, because I've seen the email back to a fan that included, you know, the KWCH newsroom where I also work, and that's the point of selling food and beverage, and it appears there was miscommunication there. So what exactly is happening with that piece of all of this too?
Yeah, and I think this, Jacob, speaks to the dangers of social media, right? The young people in our cheer and dance programs that have not worked the games have worked in concession stands. And you guys are all familiar with community groups and youth groups working concession stands as nonprofit organizations to make some money for their respective causes and groups. And that certainly has been the case with cheer and dance. Again, the folks that are not performing in game. And so they are compensated to serve fans on the main concourse out of concession stands. And I think that was spun up in a different way to say that they were responsible for serving premium seating on the floor. And that's simply not the case. We have a group called Shaken and Stirred that works in the hospitality room in the Champions Club, which is our pregame hospitality guys. And we've hired those folks to serve the premium seats on the floor, not cheer and dance.
So you're not telling cheer and dance that they need to serve the premium seats. They can in a fundraising effort. Is that correct? If they choose to?
No, they work the concession stands. They work the concession stand number of years up on the main concourse serving fans.
Okay. And that's happened in the past. That's not
that's
a new thing.
State. That's not a new thing. No.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Anything else there that we need to clear up with? And look, olive branch to the people. It sounds like you understand that people are upset, but this is the reality of the evolving college landscape. Is there anything else in this situation that needs to be out there as we, you know, as you've got a microphone here, like any other miscommunications, anything else you need to say to the people that are really upset by this?
Yeah, I would say that we're certainly not making decisions with the intent to hurt. We are trying to make middle ground, moderate decisions that have all of our student athletes, all of our coaches and staff, and everybody that we serve in mind, because we also have fans that have an expectation that we resource programs to win championships. That's really clear. And if we don't do that, then we will certainly experience the backlash on the backside of that. And so with the right decisions, I think there's a notion out there that we are not supporting spirit squads. And we sent out some financial information, and there's really four talking points to that. Four out of the last five fiscal years, we've ranked in the top three amongst the peer groups: East Carolina, Florida Atlantic, Memphis, Charlotte, North Texas, South Florida, and UTSA, all with football programs. So if we're ranking in the top three in expenditures and we don't have football expenditures, we are really investing in our spirit groups at a level that's much higher than our peers. Okay. Excluding fiscal, when you look at the last 5 years, if you were to average what the spend is for us versus our peers, we spent 51% higher than our average peer in the last 5 years. Our 5-year average is $220,000. And as I mentioned before, guys, the first year that I got here, we increased their support 61.1%. And so, again, as we want, or the participants want, probably. But at the end of the day, we've got to think about 16 intercollegiate athletics programs, 273 student athletes, and 100 coaches and staff as well. We don't have the luxury of going all in any one particular area of our department. We've got to take a balanced approach.
Kevin Saul, Wichita State Athletic Director, appreciate having this discussion. I know it's been on the minds of a lot of people. Kevin, let's jump back into some of the things happening through the athletic program. So I want to talk volleyball because they're coming down the home stretch and you guys are getting ready to host a conference championship. But before we do that, women's basketball, Terry Nooner, year two, a win in the opener against Oklahoma Christian. I know they've had good teams in past years. Kind of hard for us to judge that. What are you hearing from Coach Nooner? Like how are they feeling so far through an exhibition in one game about, you know, what everybody hopes is a return of Wichita State women's basketball?
Yeah, he likes the depth. He likes the speed, the athleticism of this roster. He's going to be able to go pretty deep, guys. I think first game, obviously a little concerned over the turnovers.
the free throw shooting. But again, this is a club that has shown the ability to grow summer and in their Virgin Islands foreign tour experience and all those things. So it's early. Oklahoma Christian, I thought, was a good club. I mean, they were hitting pretty well in terms of shots from the field and those sort of things. But at the end of the day, I came away with a 14-point win. I think we had 30 empty possessions between missed three-pointers and turnovers. So if you convert those at a 44% clip like we did the rest of the game, you know, ifs and buts, candy and nuts. But at the end of the day, that's a 25 to 30-point win. And so it's a good lesson. Anytime you can win and learn, I think, is very good. And we've got to learn quick because we've got a really, really good Belmont club coming in on Saturday at 2 p.m. before the men's game that evening. And Belmont, I think, has made the NCAA tournament like 5 out of the last 7 years. They were a OVC opponent of ours when I was at Murray. Their women's basketball team is very, very good. They transitioned to the Missouri Valley when Murray State did as well. And so I'm familiar with those programs. That'll be a great challenge for our women. And then our men play Montana State that evening as well, who's made, I think, 3 out of the last 3 NCAA tournaments. So it shapes up to be a really nice day of basketball for both our men's and women's program on Saturday.
Heck yeah, and for Shocker fans or just basketball fans, you might not know this yet, but Taylor Jamison has been leading the way for women's basketball. Of course, a Heights grad that has transferred back into Wichita State, so there's one more. And then Kevin Volleyball, on a little bit of a heater here, won their last 4 matches, and then right back in the mix here, just a game behind the conference leaders. We know that you guys will get to host the conference championship. I don't understand this stuff. I lean on you guys. Is it how many bids does the league, do you think, get? And is it a situation where Wichita State needs to win that? Can they get in without it? How does that look for volleyball?
I would need to look at today's RPI. I haven't looked at the RPI here in a week or so. But if you've got, you're going to get the one automatic qualifier. But if we've got one that's in the top 40 to 45 RPI, you can expect that we would be a 2-bid league. You guys are aware we're hosting the conference championship because SMU won it last year, went to the ACC. So it shifts down to us. And I think, honestly, we've got an opportunity to beat anybody in the field in our home venue. So we're playing our best volleyball right now. We're sitting at 9-3 in the league, which is tied with East Carolina. And then you've got the other two clubs, Rice and South Florida, are sitting at 10-2. We still have an opportunity to play Rice at their place. And so that'll be a great opportunity. It is a well-seasoned, well-tested team. We played, I think, 6 ranked or receiving votes opponents. And the other pins, as you mentioned, we're at Rice on Friday this week, and then at Tulane, and then at North Texas. So these next 3 road games will go a long way in determining where we are in our seeding for the conference tournament.
That conference tournament, November 22nd through 24th, volleyball fans, if you haven't checked it out, that'll be a really cool event to get all those teams in. Kevin, appreciate it again. Know you're under the weather. Let's get better and get our first home games in the books here. And hey, it's basketball season.
Sounds great. Jacob, I really appreciate the opportunity. And Paul, hope you're well. And we'll talk to you guys soon. Go Shockers.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it.
There goes Kevin Salt, Wichita State Athletic Director. A lot there, including, you know, what has been a big talker with the cheerleading squad. If you missed any of it, if you joined us late, you can always go back and listen to the entire interview on the Odyssey app. It's basketball season, Paul. Man,
we're there.
I'm fired up for it. I love it. I've been bullish on this Shocker team for a while. I know a lot of people have been, but there's a feel there that Shocker basketball could really create some more, you know, energy and start to get back to what, you know, what we're used to there. And certainly the opener was good. It'll be good to see him come back and play another quality game.
Absolutely.
Here this weekend. Yeah. Go back and listen on the Odyssey app. We're a little behind here, so we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. NFL trade deadline, including one not made for the Chiefs that they were apparently in on, one of the headlines of yesterday. We'll do that next on Sports Daily.
KFH.
Oh, okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Back-to-back interviews lets us catch our breath here a little bit. So the IHOP hotline is back open now at 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP, where you can celebrate the weekdays with new IHOP House faves, all your favorites for just $6, Monday through Friday. Glad to be here with you on a Wednesday, on a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday.
Yeah. Look at this right here.
I don't know if this shirt, I've used it before. I don't know if this one technically counts as Hawaiian, but I feel like it is, so I'm going to count it in. You know, it's a good day, to celebrate being loud and, you know, obnoxious Hawaiian shirt wearing Americans. We just came out of an election day, which is always a patriotic day.
Well, that's the beautiful thing about Hawaiian shirt day here on KFA Sports Daily. That's the beautiful thing. You can call it whatever you want. Who are we to judge what somebody else calls a Hawaiian shirt? That's the beautiful thing about our movement.
It is. Everything goes. Everything counts.
Everything goes.
It was election day. It was K-State basketball night. It was also the NFL trade deadline, Paul.
Yep.
Yesterday, the Chiefs have been very active, and I would say so far, but you know, on the returns that they've seen with, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, they didn't trade for him, but they added Kareem Hunt. They've been successful making moves this year. Mm-hmm. We'll see with some of the later moves that they were able to make. One that they didn't make that they were reportedly in on. That's interesting. Probably the biggest move of the day yesterday was that the Commanders went in and traded for a corner, Marshon Lattimore, who's had just a ton of success in this league. And so the Commanders go and solve a need that a great need that they had, a bigger need than the Chiefs need it. And they need it because of injury. But Lattimore comes in there and the reporting is, and I think it was The Athletic and probably others, basically saying the Chiefs were in on him. They were, you know, they're dumb, but they were in on Lattimore and they didn't get him. So I think, and we saw that one. And then we also saw Tre'Davious White get traded to the Ravens. And he's, you know, he's not what he once was, but two high profile corners, we'll call it. The Chiefs don't go make those moves. I thought it was interesting because you wonder if the Chiefs really wanted Lattimore, could they have done it? Now, he would have been a financial fit this year, Paul. He's not owed very much this year, but he would have become a financial burden over the next 2 years. Maybe it was simple as that. Maybe it was as simple as the Commanders were just willing to give more up to get him, but the Chiefs don't land him. So that secondary is what it is now.
Yeah.
You know, we've passed the trade deadline. I don't think you're going to go pick anybody up off the street that's going to make a major impact at that position on the football field. And we did see the Buccaneers kind of pass the ball effectively without their top two weapons. So I do think it's something to watch here down the stretch. I don't think it was so urgent that the Chiefs had to do something. I think there are other things that they can do to help that. Uche comes in, maybe helps the pass rush. You know, Paul, that helps the secondary a great deal.
Right.
But, you know, do you feel like it was a missed opportunity at all on a player like Lattimore?
Well, not really, because here's part of the problem. Right now, just a couple of days ago, I think it was Adam Schaffler who came up with the story. You know where everybody wants to go nowadays? All the players that are looking for a new home, you know where they want to go? They want to go to Washington. They want to be a part of that trend with Jalen Daniels. That's where they want to go. This is a team that right now is sort of the end deal. It's where you want to be. So I'm not surprised that this was a decision made by Marshon Lattimore. I understand it is the soup du jour at this moment. But, you know, you go to the Chiefs and you have a chance to win a Super Bowl, be on an undefeated football team. But, of course, you get right down to it. And what I look at is right now, DeAndre Hopkins was the pick. This was the move for a football team that's competing for a Super Bowl championship. Boy, what a difference he made. By the way, you think they made the right decision after you watched that game the other night with the Bucs? I'm telling you right now, it looks like the guy's 22 years old and he was phenomenal. Phenomenal. A difference maker. Isn't that what we've been looking for what, maybe a year or two? Maybe
it's
really
it's interesting. Yeah, I can't believe how good he looked against the Buccaneers.
Yeah,
I was bullish on that move. I thought that move made sense. I think it was the right move. Man, he looked good. And he did. And Tommy and I talked about it. He added something for Mahomes that feels like a rejuvenation. And it's confidence, I think, as much as anything. I mean, Mahomes was firing just missiles in there, knowing that Hopkins is going to catch that ball. I think it adds something for the team they've sorely missed. And as we saw in the big play, the deep ball, he can go make that play too. Mm-hmm. That has been what they've missed a great, great deal. Mm-hmm. But yeah, look, he is going to be a major factor for them. And eventually they're going to get Juju Smith-Schuster back. They might get Hollywood Brown back. Who knows if they could get Rashee Rice back. That'll be a position of strength by the time the dust settles on this. Secondary probably won't be. You know, Trent McDuffie's great, and we'll see. Kind of like left tackle, it's going to be up to some young players to really step up and you know, finish the deal and get better by the time the Chiefs need them to get better. But I would say it amplifies the pressure on Uche, Paul, the pass rusher they added, to be able to generate a little more, you know, pressure to help those young corners over there get up to speed quickly and this not become a deficiency for the defense, which is, you know, we'll watch that closely over these next few weeks. They're going to get challenged by a few good passing attacks.
Right.
Won't be this week in Denver, but, you know, they'll play Buffalo coming up. They'll play Pittsburgh coming up. They'll get some challenges on teams that can throw it around a little
bit. Right. Spags is a smart guy. I mean, he knows what's what. You know, he'll be okay. Because what he'll do is he'll start tweaking some zone stuff. You know, if somebody needs some help or somebody needs to be covered up a little bit, you know, he'll tweak some zones and everything. I think everything will be just fine. I think this is still a really good football team. And with DeAndre Hopkins, by the way, did you notice how open the first 10 yards was available for Travis Kelce? I mean, it was almost like, you know, now that you've got a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, my goodness, the things just open up underneath DeAndre Hopkins. It's amazing. It's fun to watch. It's fun to see how that has evolved. And I think it was almost the addition of DeAndre Hopkins is almost like a new lease on life for Travis Kelce, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course it is.
I don't know how much I like him taking on 16 targets in a game, which I think was the number without having
to. Well, that was a lot.
I think it was 16.
No, something like that.
Only because he's older.
Yeah.
I think, though, that Hopkins over time can relieve some of that. And I want to say when Juju comes back, he probably can too. Travis Kelce is capable and he's telling, because he appears to be, Paul, to me anyway, this year, and based on the things that he said in the offseason, he feels more in tune with paying attention to that than maybe in years past. Like, oh, I'm a little bit older. I got to be careful here. If he's telling the Chiefs and the coaches and Patrick Mahomes to pepper him with targets, I'm comfortable with trusting Travis Kelce on that.
Okay.
I do think, though, that they probably would prefer to, you know, to save him up a bit, you know, to let him kind of build up to the postseason. But look, if he wants to get out there and do it and it works and DeAndre Hopkins opens up that part of the offense, go for it. I mean, there's no question that was, to me, Paul, the most impressive offensive performance collectively they've had all year. I mean, the book on Tampa is you throw on them, right, and they've got a good run defense. Well, Kareem Hunt, he rushed for 100 yards. They ran it, I think, 27 times. Like, the Chiefs were able to take a balanced attack to a defense that is very one-sided and kind of impose their will. If Travis Kelce's a part of that and they're all comfortable with it, I guess I am too.
Well, that's a very good point. That's a lot of, because every time you make a catch, you're going to get hit. In fact, every time you're targeted, you're probably going to get it, whether you catch it or not. And that's a lot of wear and tear on a guy that just turned 35 years old in October. So that's a good point, Jacob. I like that point. So, you know, you've got to be careful how you use him. And at first I thought there was sort of like, well, maybe there was a little limit put on Travis Kelce. And we get into the second part of the season, maybe you start seeing that little element, you know, raise its head. I don't have a problem with that. It's probably smart. And then, you know, it's all.
Well, tell me this on a tight end, because I always wonder this. We look at 16 targets and we think, man, that's, you know, maybe he has taken a beating and, you know, all these things. But isn't a tight end kind of always taking a beating? Because when they're not catching passes, they're blocking. Right, well, and they're blocking it.
Now, he doesn't do that all the time because he lines up at so many places. And, of course, he's not that guy. He's not Blake Bell, who much of the time was lined up at a true tight end.
Right, but what I'm saying is, you know, yeah, he's taken a lot of contact as a receiver.
That's right.
But he's also taken a lot of contact when he's just blocking. Earlier.
That's right.
So how much, how much are you really, like, is there much of a difference? You know, you've coached the position. Is there much of a difference as far as, like, trying to preserve the body?
Sure.
And him blocking versus sure. being a pass catcher?
Yeah, oh, there is, definitely. And I'm glad you bring that up, because part of the situation with that would be simply this. How athletic are most defensive ends? How strong, how quick are most defensive ends? You know, they make their bones, you know, with rips and dips and, you know, all those kind of things, clubs and, you know, they're physical, aren't they? They're physical. For the most part, they're physical. They have to be physical to get around offensive linemen. If you're locked up and you're helping on pass protection or your run defense, you're going to be blocking these guys, particularly on the run. You know, you come off the ball. A lot of bad things happen in the trenches. It's not uncommon to see guys beat to the dickens, you know, to death after a game, who have been playing in the trenches particularly. How would you like to be lined up against Chris Jones every game? I mean, he's going to beat the crap out of you. That's what he's going to do.
Yeah.
He's going to beat the crap out of you, because that's what they do. And the good ones do that. So you're right. There's a lot more wear and tear when you're inside the formation. When you're outside the formation, then it's not quite as bad. But every time you're targeted, somebody's going to hit you. Whether you catch it or not, somebody's going to hit you.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not worried about it yet. If that's the way they want to run the offense and Travis Kelce has a ton, good.
That's right.
Great. Who cares? Because if the offense looks like that, that's the best it's looked, and you just kind of trust them at that point.
Right.
But they don't make the move at the trade deadline. Marshawn Lattimore goes to the Commanders. We did see the Ravens at a corner. The Chiefs do not. So sort of like at left tackle, they've got what they've got. And look, they're 8-0. We all understand that. It's also a different sort of year that it is all or nothing, right? It's all about that Super Bowl. So we look at these decisions under a bigger microscope than we probably normally would, but they're 8-0, and they look like the best team in football, and the offense is looking better than it has all year. We'll see if the defense can stay as, you know, dominant as they were early in the year as they get a little thinner. But they did add some reinforcements in the pass rush, and we'll watch all of those things, certainly. But that is the trade deadline. You know, I think, again, this, you know, happened before, but the Lions getting Za'Darius Smith feels probably the most impactful to a team that is contending for the Super Bowl. The Cowboys make a move that is... seems to be pretty terrible. I'll be quite honest as far as what the price that they paid. So it could be worse. You could be doing that and overpaying.
Yeah.
But we'll take a peek at some of the other moves made at the trade deadline when we return. And did it make anybody more of a contender? That's where we'll go next. It's all Brockton Savage. It's Sports Daily. Stay right here. We're coming right back.
And 1240
Insider Shreyas Lotta. If you missed anything from Wichita State Athletic Director Kevin Saul, who, yes, did get into the cheerleading situation with us. That escalated quickly. So you can go listen to the reasons behind the decision for some changes there to spirit at basketball games. That's all available on the Odyssey app, as is the Chiefs Kingdom show tonight at 6 o'clock, Paul. The Chris Kleiman Coaches Show at 7 o'clock. You can hear those, of course, here on KFH and find them on the Odyssey app as well. Busy night on the Odyssey app. All right. A little bit of rapid fire here. Trade deadline, Paul. The Bengals get a weapon if they end up becoming players again that will probably help them in Khalil Herbert. I told you that I think Za'Darius Smith coming over to the Lions probably is the most potentially impactful.
Could be.
Because and he's not, you know, he's not what he once was necessarily, but he's got the ability to really help fill a hole for Aiden Hutchinson. So that one to me feels the most impactful of the moves that were made yesterday. We're talking about not necessarily, you know, I think there's absolutely a chance that DeAndre Hopkins is the most impactful. The Chargers add a wide receiver, KJ Osborne. Interesting. We mentioned that the Commanders added Marshawn Lattimore. If you believe in the Commanders, hey, 7-2, why not? That's an impactful move for sure. You saw that the Steelers added a wide receiver with some juice in Mike Williams, wasn't working in New York there. I think that's a potentially impactful move if he gets healthy. Preston Smith, they also added a pass rusher. I'm telling you, Paul, I'm in on the Steelers. I'm in on what right. the Steelers are cooking here. I think they're real contenders in the AFC.
Well, I think you're probably right. And of course, you know, you could always throw out a Davante Adams to the Jets or I guess maybe Amari.
But you got to expect them. Yeah, you got to expect Cooper to the Bills is impactful for sure.
Could be, yes.
Adams to the Jets, I think we're going to have to sit back and see if the Jets can do something special.
Right.
And I know they won their last game, and I thought they'd win their last game, and I actually had them winning that game against the Texans, but they got a long way to go. So now, let's see with them. Here's the one that has everybody laughing and me shaking my
okay,
head.
I was going to ask you about that one. I'll bet it's the Dallas Cowboys. Am I right?
So we're seeing like the compensation packages for Adams and for Cooper and for – you know, DeAndre Hopkins.
Okay, yeah.
Here comes Jerry Jones, and, you know, he's kind of just doubling down a little bit on, remember when they said they're going all in, and then they didn't do anything to actually go all in.
Gotcha.
So then what they do is they go and trade a fourth round pick, essentially what the Chiefs gave up to get DeAndre Hopkins in a best case scenario to go get, I don't know, the third or fourth best wide receiver on the worst team in football. And Jonathan Mingo, he was a guy that was drafted early second round. But, you know, this year you talk about making an impact is his 12 catches on the year for 120 yards through eight games. Paul, that'll be the difference for the Cowboys. Jonathan Mingo will be the difference.
Yeah. Been in the league two years, no touchdowns. He hadn't scored a touchdown yet. How about that?
What are we doing here?
I have no idea.
Is this is this satire? Like, that can't even be real. You see that, and it was a headline. I was like, oh, Jonathan Mingo. I remember when he was drafted pretty high. He hadn't really done anything. It's like a fourth round pick?
Right. I don't even remember the last time I remember hearing his name mentioned, except from the draft. I don't even remember him being mentioned yet, and now today he is, obviously, and of course it's crazy because
I liked him as a prospect. That and I don't think that
the
book is closed on him, but a fourth round pick.
I hear you on that. I'd rather have my fourth round pick than that. That's for dang sure. But it's
that felt like a seventh round pick kind of trade,
right?
Like a pick swap in the late rounds kind of trade.
Yeah, but you know what it says though. It says that. Jerry Jones is listening to the fans. I've got to do something. Right, wrong, indifferent, who cares, who knows? I've got to do something. It's almost like it's panicked. It's almost like it's panic. Does it almost seem like it's panic to you? Because that's what it seems like to me. I got to do something. I got to do something. I got to do something now. I don't know.
There ain't no almost about it, Paul. Of course it's a panic move. It makes absolutely no sense.
Right.
It makes zero impact on this team. And it's an overpay. They should have been selling. The Cowboys suck. And Dak Prescott's out now for a while. Like, what are you doing buying at the deadline? What are you even? My goodness. What a hot mess. What a hot mess. I'm glad it gave everybody else something to laugh at yesterday.
Well, it did.
Cowboys fans are just over here like, whatever, man. Doesn't surprise me at all that happens. All right. A busy show today. Go back and find anything you missed on the Odyssey app. We'll come right back. We'll tell you about the busy night here on the network when we return on Sports Daily.